Less than 100 days to go until election 2008, and the candidates are still trying to close the deal with American voters. It's Monday, the 28th of July, and time for All Things Political. Hi, I'm Veronica Rickert, in this week for Kathleen Dunn, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. A lot of questions on our minds today, including, was Obama's overseas trip last week a success? Are John McCain and Barack Obama swapping positions on the timetable for Iraq withdrawal? Is there an Obama bias in the media? And are some key red states back in play for the Democrats? We'll be chatting about all this and more this hour with our guest Peverell Squire, a political scientist from the University of Missouri and co-editor of the Legislative Studies Quarterly. Well, what's your take on Obama's big trip? Did it paint the picture of a world leader for you? And who's flip-flopping on troop withdrawals in Iraq, McCain or Obama? Also, is there a media bias that you've seen in a favor of Obama? You can call with your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And Peverell Squire, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Good morning.
Well, I want to start with Barack Obama's big overseas trip last week. Most pundits are saying it was a success, and he met with key players in Iraq and Israel and in France. He delivered the big Berlin speech. What is your take? Was this kind of an unqualified success?
Well, I think it worked out probably as well as the campaign had hoped. This was an opportunity for him, of course, to go to Iraq and Afghanistan, as he had been sort of goaded into doing by the McCain campaign. It was also a chance for him to appear on the world stage and to present an image of America that we haven't seen very often over the last 8 years. And so I think all the visuals that came back from that trip and most of the reports probably worked to Obama's benefit.
I know I read about a couple of gaffes, including the meeting with wounded troops, which McCain was quick to point out, and also a misspeak or two. But you think overall this was a picture that America needed to see as a qualified world leader who was comfortable on the international stage?
Well, I think to the extent that people care about the image of the U.S. right now and whether Obama is able to project sort of that presidential aura that we like to associate with the office, I think it worked out pretty well. My guess is these overseas trips probably don't do as much for the campaign dynamics as either the campaigns think they do. And of course, this is all occurring in the dead of the summer when most Americans probably aren't as tuned into presidential politics as they will be in the fall. But I think for Obama, he needed to take a trip like this and to get it out of the way and have a generally positive feel left from it. It is probably as good as they could have hoped.
I was just reading an opinion piece by Frank Rich in the New York Times before I came in this morning, and he was talking about as though there was something a little bit cheeky about Obama taking this trip and passing himself off as a president, really, when he's still got to win the election. Do you see anything cheeky about this trip?
Well, I think any campaign trip that's taken by somebody running for the presidency and who likes to have sort of the trappings of the office before they achieve it is a little bit cheeky. And you could say the same thing about Senator McCain's trips in recent weeks down to Central and South America. It is a little awkward for the candidates. They have to project themselves as a potential leader, but at the same time, they don't hold office. And in the case of both McCain and Obama, they're just U.S. senators visiting. So it puts sort of their hosts in a bit of an awkward position and the campaigns as well. But I think, again, for Senator Obama, if people were having trouble seeing him as being presidential, this trip may have taken care of those concerns for them.
It seems as though he was greeted warmly by the leaders that he met with one notable exception, Sarkozy in France, who pretty much said, "Go Obama, and France is behind you." He was going a little bit farther than everyone else. I was just wondering if you thought that might actually hurt Obama, considering sort of the still sort of tender relationship the U.S. has with France.
I'm not sure it's going to hurt Senator Obama's campaign. I'm not sure most Americans will delve into the details of the trip that much. I think probably the most positive aspect is this notion that Americans aren't widely loved in the world right now, at least the American government isn't. And I think to see people in Europe and elsewhere sort of rallying behind an American politician again was a little bit refreshing. And again, I'm not sure it's going to swing many votes either for or against Senator Obama, but I think having this trip out of the way again without any major gaffes really does work to his campaign's benefit.
Well, McCain has reason to be apparently jealous of Barack Obama. He did get a ton of coverage for this overseas trip, and some sources are saying that there is a media bias in the press to favor coverage of Barack Obama. One watchdog group found that, I believe, 78% of election coverage is about Obama, whereas McCain only lands 51%.
Well, I think this is a carryover from, obviously, the Democratic nomination campaign when the Clinton people felt pretty seriously that they were being given less favorable attention than Senator Obama. There is some irony here because, of course, Senator McCain is the past love favorite of the national media. He had benefited a great deal in 2000 and again in the lead-up into this campaign from having very good relations with the national press. And I think he's feeling a little bit jilted now that they seem to be focused more on Senator Obama than on his own campaign. And so I think there is some legitimacy to the grievance of the McCain campaign. Certainly this trip overseas got an extraordinary amount of attention, far more than McCain's own trips to foreign countries have gotten.
Do you see that evening out as we draw closer to the conventions?
Well, I suspect once we get into the fall, the national media will be covering them roughly equally, and that's just the nature of their business. They do try to be even-handed in terms of minutes. And, of course, if you look over the course of this entire campaign, Senator McCain has probably had more interview time than any of the other candidates. So he's really not in a particularly good position to complain about this. But I do think there is some legitimacy to their grievances, and I think as we get further into the campaign, we'll probably see both candidates questioning whether, in fact, they're getting the media attention that they deserve.
Well, speaking of the conventions, have you got any sense of what we can expect to see from the Democrats and the Republicans?
Well, I think the national conventions have changed so much over the course of the last two generations. That we'll see the usual made-for television moments, and of course, Senator Obama is going to take the extraordinary step to accepting the nomination, not in a convention hall, but rather in a stadium where it can be packed with tens of thousands of people. And so I think, again, most people will probably view the conventions as an attempt by both parties to sort of manipulate them into presenting the images and the messages that they want. My concern with both conventions is they'll probably get lost in all the other things that Americans have going on around this time. Of course, they'll be sandwiched between the Olympics and then the beginning of school years and the end of summer vacations. And I think for most Americans, given the extraordinary length of this campaign, there may be a little bit of voter fatigue, and I suspect the conventions probably won't get very much attention.
That's interesting. I would have thought the opposite, considering the fact that this is not your average election campaign. This is, you know, this is history.
It's true, and it is an extraordinary campaign, but I think most people have seen McCain and Obama as the nominees for so long that the notion that they're going to be formally nominated will seem a little bit bizarre, since I think they've both been acting as the nominees for several months, and the conventions themselves will be full of things that most Americans don't really want to sort of expose themselves to. I've always been in favor of the conventions, thinking that once every 4 years Americans can stand to listen to their political leaders in sort of a concentrated effort, but I think most Americans probably won't take that position, and other than maybe tuning in to see the acceptance speeches, which will be an opportunity for both candidates to sort of, again, present themselves to the nation. My guess is most of the rest of the convention will be widely ignored.
I always like the conventions because you get a chance to watch those videos about their biographies, which seem to be getting increasingly well done.
I think both candidates have probably had their campaigns invest a good deal of time and effort into assembling those. And again, I think as they try to top whatever was the better one 4 years before, I think they may have pushed that particular strategy to its limits. And so we'll see, again, exactly how many people decide to tune in. But, again, there's enough competition on most people's cable dials these days that I'm not sure very many people will be tuning into the conventions themselves.
What about this back and forth that's been going on between Obama and McCain about who's flip-flopping on the Iraq troop withdrawal? It seems as though if you read the stances, they have sort of assumed each other's positions. Now McCain is saying what Barack Obama has said, that maybe a 16-month timetable would be okay. And on the other hand, there's Barack Obama saying it's about the conditions on the ground. What's going on here?
Well, it is curious. And we, again, because of the length of the campaign, the candidates do have the opportunity to shift positions in a number of ways over the course of this time span. What I think is ultimately going to emerge from this particular conversation is that the water is going to be so muddied in terms of where each candidate stands on the issue that the McCain campaign will have lost a significant advantage they may have had before everybody started talking about timetables and before the Bush administration and the Maliki administrations had weighed in seemingly in favor of some sort of timetable. All of this seems to work to Obama's advantage. McCain was seen as the stronger commander-in-chief, the man who sort of had stood strong on Iraq over a time period when that was politically difficult to do. And now that it's harder to distinguish his position from Obama's, that just allows everybody to look at the rest of the campaign issues, which tend, given the nature of politics this year, to lean in the Democrats' favor.
Another story that's been in the press this week is the announcement from the Obama campaign that some key red states they think are back in play for the Democrats.
This is an interesting development, and of course, we've gotten kind of used to having a fairly static campaign map when you look over the presidential elections over the last couple of cycles. Most states haven't really been in play. Just a handful have been real toss-ups. It happens that the several of those toss-up states are right here in sort of the spine of the country. Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa, Missouri tend to be states that are pretty much in play. I think what Obama is doing is suggesting that his campaign's ability to bring new people to the polls, particularly in the South, may make those states more competitive than they have been in recent presidential history. And that's also a way of not only raising the possibility that the Democrats will be competitive where they haven't been for a while, but it's also a way of pinning down the McCain forces, forcing McCain, who will have less money than Obama, to spend a lot of his resources in places where Republicans haven't really had to spend much money in the last few presidential races. So to the extent that Obama can threaten the Republicans in some of the southern states and a few other states and perhaps in the Mountain West, that just makes the Republicans' task that much more difficult.
Are there real numbers behind this claim, though, or is this something that the Obama campaign is just throwing out there to shake things up?
There are numbers. We, of course, have a large number of public opinion surveys, many at the state level these days. So we have somewhat better ideas about what various voters around the country are thinking than we may have in past elections. And there's also this great uncertainty, though. We're trying to figure out who's going to show up on Election Day. And the Obama campaign has been extraordinarily successful this year in getting people to turn out who most political observers, myself included, didn't think were likely to show up. And so I think as Obama tries to increase turnout significantly beyond what we might have anticipated, that may bring some more states into play. So there is some concrete evidence behind it, and there's also this belief among the Obama people based on their success in the primaries that they're going to be able to get even more people to turn out than most of us would have expected.
We're talking this hour with Peverell Squire. He is a political scientist at the University of Missouri and co-editor of the Legislative Studies Quarterly. We're talking all things political this morning, looking at Obama's overseas trip, a perceived media bias in favor of Barack Obama, and whether or not some of these key red states might be back in play for the Democrats. Well, tell us your thoughts. Have you perceived that media bias? And what did you think about Obama's big overseas trip? You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Veronica Rickert, in for Kathleen Dunn, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickert back with you today. I'm in for Kathleen Dunn. Hoping you'll stick around next hour as we talk with Gretchen Rubin, who is writing a book called The Happiness Project. It's the story of her year test driving every tip, principle, study, you name it, that she could find about happiness, trying to figure out what works. We'll find out what worked for her coming up at 10 o'clock. This hour, we're talking politics with Peverell Squire, political scientist from the University of Missouri and co-editor of the Legislative Studies Quarterly. Taking your phone calls this morning, too, trying to find out what your take is on the election 2008, some of the past events of the week, Obama's big trip, media bias, and the flip-flopping of troop withdrawals between Obama and McCain. Our phone number is 1-800-642-1234. We'd love to take your call this morning. And we're going to go to the phones now and pick up a call from Drew in Milwaukee. Hi, Drew, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I just want to make the comment that I think that there's a difference between bias, per se, and attention. Barack Obama is getting a lot of attention in the media because of the historic nature of his candidacy, but I don't think that that's bias. And additionally, at least two things come to mind in terms of him getting a little bit of a thrashing. Well, at least one thing offhand, which is the Reverend Wright controversy, which he was really hit on pretty hard. And the other thing that I just want to point out is that even in the midst of this historic visit to Europe and the Middle East, that every time there's a big full-page article, there's always a little thing there with McCain saying, what's McCain doing, and talking about how he's about to name his vice president. So I think that people are bending over backwards to give equal time to both candidates.
I guess maybe at the core of Drew's argument there is that you can't manufacture the stories necessarily. I mean, you can, but I mean, the juicy stuff is with Obama's campaign. What do you think, Percival Squire?
Well, I think the problem the McCain people have is it is hard to compete with Obama's candidacy. And I think that's probably frustrating for them. And again, the caller is right. I think by the time we get to Election Day, American voters will know everything they need to know about both candidates and probably a lot more than they wish they knew about them. Neither candidate will be ignored. Neither candidate will be able to sweep things under the rug or not to have the glare of attention to put on everything having to do with their candidacies. And so I think right now it's probably just frustrating for the McCain campaign because they thought they were in a position to maybe make up some ground on Obama, and everything went so well for Obama's trip overseas that the spotlight really shifted away from McCain and back onto Obama, and that was probably just something they hadn't fully anticipated. So again, from time to time, we will hear grievances from both campaigns about the sort of coverage that they've gotten. And again, as I mentioned earlier, among American politicians, neither McCain nor Obama are particularly well positioned to complain about national media coverage. They've both done very well in that over time.
Let's take another call, going on to Jim, calling from Milwaukee. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I would encourage the listeners to grab a piece of paper if they want to jot down a couple things for reference for networking. My topic today is the incompetence of McCain, subtitled, It's a Stupidity Stupid. And, you know, it's really risky to attack people's logic because, on the one hand, if you let it go, the illogical thinking persists. But on the other hand, if you do attack it, then you're labeled as some sort of smarty pants who thinks he's better than other people. But I'll take the chance and say that, you know, all humans, myself included, make dumb mistakes. And, of course, Obama made a mistake of an innocuous sort when he used the term sweetie, which he corrected himself on, but it's the severity of errors that count. And, you know, remember two things. In South Carolina, where McCain, in responding to the woman, said, how do we beat the B word, referring to mm-hmm. Hillary, that he smiled without hesitation and said, excellent question, later tried to cover it up, but his true feelings were revealed. So in that case, how can any self-respecting woman or any sensitive man vote for McCain, given that stupidity? And the final point is on foreign policy, and I would reference people to the Chicago Tribune libertarian Stephen Chapman, McCain's confusion on Iraq last week, and on and especially Clarence Page, July 23rd, he pointed out that McCain went on ABC and referred to the rough situation on the Iraq-Pakistan border. Well, of course, Pakistan is not on the border of Iraq, and if a guy is so fundamentally lacking in intelligence that he can't even discern that. How can he be superior to Obama in leading our country, and how can any self-respecting man vote for that?
Thank you for those comments, Jim. And let me ask you, I hadn't heard about the Sweetie thing. Can you tell me what that was?
Well, he just used a reference to women in talking to some woman who used the term Sweetie.
Hmm.
And you know, and I've been at fault of that. I've used that with my daughter-in-law as a term of affection, but it's judged to be inappropriate and sexist, a vestige of sexism, and so Obama, like me, made the adjustment.
Well, thank you for telling that story, and let's get our guest take on that. Peverell Squire?
Well, you know, this is one of the first campaign that we've had where you see sort of blanket coverage of everything that the candidates do. It's hard for them to have any public event where there isn't somebody who has at least a cell phone on them or something that they can use to record their images and their comments. And so I think it is difficult for candidates to avoid making these gaffes from time to time, particularly in such a taxing atmosphere. We forget the physical strain that goes along with running for president, the notion of having to fly, you know, not only around the country but around the world sometimes, and have to be sharp and on top of everything you say at every moment when you're out in public. And so McCain has had more than his share of gaffes and some situations where he has not handled questions as well as he probably wishes he had. And so we'll see whether these facts accumulate over time and shift people's images of the two candidates. But certainly, if you're looking for an area where the difference in age may play to Senator Obama's advantage, you know, Senator McCain is not a young man, and this is an awfully grueling event that we're forcing him to go through. And so we may see more and more of these problems arise as we get into the even more active phase of the campaign.
Yeah, it does seem as though with people who have to talk that much and travel that much, there's bound to be some missteps. I know that Obama, on his recent trip, said Israel has always been a friend to Israel, which didn't tell anybody very much of anything, but it just goes to show you how tongue-tying the whole experience must be.
You know, it is grueling, and any time you've had to sort of speak in public for an extended period, you know, there are many opportunities for you to trip over your own tongue. And so any of us who have done it can sort of commiserate with the candidates who have to do it endlessly day after day.
I suppose at a certain point you have to go, I know you're tired, but you know, there must be a certain line in the public perception where you think, okay, there's a difference between tripping and being just incompetent, like Jim was
saying. Well, the problem for Senator McCain is some of his bigger gaffes have involved foreign affairs, and this is supposed to be his area of strength. And when he gets confused between Pakistan and Afghanistan, and when he, you know, has problems keeping straight some of the geography, that just weakens one of the strengths that he has as a candidate.
Well, thanks for that call, Jim. Let's go on to Steve in Middleton. Hi, Jim. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
You know, it's just so embarrassing to be a citizen of this country that we're given this choice of these two salt and pepper types as candidates. As much as I despise the ruling Republican Party, I look at this empty suit Obama that they give us, and he's running all around, and he wants more soldiers to invade Afghanistan, and he keeps up with this pretense that September 11th was brought about by Osama in a cave with box-cutting hijackers. When anyone can see that those two towers were brought down by explosives and it was an inside job, and yet he continues with this pretense, and the young people are falling for Obama, thinking he'll bring in something new, when all he is another representative of the military-industrial corporate complex. So I'm so disgusted. I hope lightning strikes both of these clowns and we get a fresh choice like McKinney or Nader. Thank you so much, Veronica, with your dulcet tones. You are the greatest. And, Squire, I appreciate your straight-shooting talk. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Steve. So a lot to talk about there. I think that what's one of the the essence of Steve's comments there is that these candidates aren't that different, even though that Obama is being billed as a very different candidate. In terms of the militarism of his stances, some critics have said that he's really not that that liberal.
Well, what I think you've seen in this campaign, as we see in most presidential races, is both candidates have, after having moved to the left and right respectively for their nomination races, are busy trying to move themselves back to the center where most of the voters reside and where the election will be won. And for Democrats, it's been frustrating in some cases to see Obama sort of emphasize his more centrist positions rather than those that are more liberal. And then the same frustration exists among Republicans when they see McCain acting and in a more mainstream fashion than many of the conservatives would like. And it does highlight the role that will be played by candidates like Bob Barr and Ralph Nader and maybe Cynthia McKinney, the minor party candidates who will appear on most, probably not all the ballots, but most of the ballots around the country. And the question is whether any of them will siphon off enough votes to shift what could be a tight race. Now, I'm not sure this will be a tight race, but we have seen, obviously, going back to 2000, where taking votes away from one candidate can give the election to the other one. And we'll see whether, in fact, any of the minor party candidates have enough pull this time around to have any noticeable effect. I think probably most people are looking to Bob Barr as the Libertarian candidate, maybe taking some votes away from McCain, but that remains to be seen whether, in fact, he'll get enough attention to generate much votes.
Do you think that we're seeing the true politics and positions of Barack Obama, or is there a chance that his campaign is saying, look, you know, we've succeeded in getting the first African-American president candidate the nomination. We don't want to have a candidate who's out there on the fringe on top of that.
Well, I'm sure they're very concerned not to be seen as being too liberal. And certainly Barack Obama is among the more liberal Democrats in the Senate. But he has, on a number of issues, taken fairly centrist positions. And so I think they want to emphasize those positions which are less amenable to being attacked by the Republicans. And certainly that's probably the wise thing as they try to protect the lead throughout the fall. They just don't want to give the Republicans any significant opening to allow McCain to paint Obama as being out of touch with most Americans. And so I think, again, this is frustrating for people on both the political left and the political right to see the candidates running back towards the center, mm-hmm. but it's the nature of a two-party system.
On to Zach, calling from Green Bay. Welcome, Zach.
Thank you. I just wanted to make the point that although I do believe it is true that the media has been ignoring and even covering up really a large number of gaffes on McCain's part, a more important thing to me is that the context of the discussion that's been put forth by the media has been to a large degree foreign policy based, which is supposedly McCain's strong point. They have talked a little bit about oil and banking, but on health care there's been virtually not a peep about it, where McCain's answer is basically a $5,000 tax subsidy to insurance companies. On tax policy, they've talked very little, where McCain's platform is basically, you know, tax cuts for the very wealthy as a solution to everything. And also on veterans' health care voting records, which Obama's is absolutely superior to McCain's. And so they are steering towards areas of discussion that benefit McCain. And to make one final point, although it is true that Obama's campaign has raised much more money than McCain's individual campaign, it is a fact that the Republican National Committee and the Republican Party has much more money than the Democratic National Campaign or the Democratic Party, and that along with third-party spending, McCain's campaign will have plenty of money and will probably be on a par with Obama's spending ability.
All right, well, thank you for that call, Zach. And Pavril Squire?
It is true. Both candidates will have more than enough money to get their message out. And again, I think most Americans will have more than enough information on which to make their decision. The caller is also correct in that the focus in recent weeks on foreign affairs should work to McCain's advantage. Certainly that's what his campaign touts as being his strength. And I refer back to my point at the beginning of the conversation this hour, where I think recent developments in this discussion over troop timetables really works to Obama's advantage simply by making any differences between Obama and McCain's positions appear in many cases to disappear. And so that may dilute the strength that the McCain has enjoyed on that. We'll see the extent to which domestic issues come to the fore during the fall. Certainly, we would always expect the economy to be a major source of discussion. Energy prices are still likely to be important in the fall. We just don't know how important foreign affairs will be, whether, in fact, the recent trend in Iraq towards less violence will continue or whether today's bombings in several places around Iraq are heralding a new outburst of violence. And I think for both campaigns, the great uncertainty is we don't know what foreign events will occur that may shift the discussion in the presidential campaign in a direction that nobody anticipates. So we know what's likely to be discussed on the domestic policy front. Unfortunately, foreign affairs are in the hands of people outside the country who bear us ill will in many cases, and the candidates have to be flexible and be able to scramble to develop policy discussions in the context of whether events they're handed on the world stage.
Thank you to Zach, and let's take a call now from Judy calling from Richland Center. Hey, Judy.
Hi. First of all, I want to say I love this program. It's my probably favorite program all week. But I want to say that, first of all, I believe that when John McCain makes a misspeak, people in the press just cover it up, you know, or just ignore it. Obama makes a misspeak, and it's major headlines. Furthermore, I've heard McCain criticize Barack Obama's trip, in as much as I believe he said that he didn't visit the injured troops. Well, I believe that's the case. He finally got him to go to Iraq. Now he has to criticize something else. And lastly, I know this isn't politically correct to talk about, but I think his age is an issue. I'm well into my 60s, and I think anybody as they get older has to admit that you aren't as sharp. You do get more tired. And anybody who doesn't admit that, I think, is in denial. I think once there is any kind of debate between the two, I think people will truly see the difference in that, you know, the age is going to make a difference. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you for that call, Judy. Peverell Squire?
You know, we've had survey questions asked about the importance of age and in this presidential race, and certainly Senator McCain's very old in terms of people running for the presidency. And it does matter. Some people have been willing to express the idea that there are concerns about whether Senator McCain is physically up to the task. And certainly for somebody his age, for somebody any age, he's vigorous. He's able to go through this campaign remarkably well. But it's a reasonable question to ask. This is a four-year position. And, you know, we're trying to project ahead from, 72 to 76 and how Senator McCain is going to be able to handle the stresses that are associated with the presidency. All of us who are old enough to have watched a number of presidents during the course of their administrations can all remember what they look like at the beginning and what they look like at the end, and it's a terrible strain to put on anybody. And so this is an important question, and it's one that probably won't be emphasized in terms of media coverage, but again, because Americans are going to learn so much about these candidates and are going to see them so often, that people will be able to make their own judgment as to whether they think Senator McCain is up to the job or not.
Obviously, you want someone who's mentally with it and really sharp, but I've been wondering if the election campaign isn't the hardest part about it, because if, you know, say John McCain were to get elected, he'd have gone through the most grueling part of the scheduling. Obviously, the stress would pile on, but, you know, look at Ronald Reagan. He was always talking about how he never missed a nap.
Well, you know, it is possible that his schedulers would be able to make life a little easier for him as president than as candidate. But the stresses of the job are just overwhelming, particularly when you get involved in any sort of international crisis. And it's just wearing, and it's constant, and there's no escaping it. And there's also the reality that, you know, time is going to march on for either of the candidates. And for Senator McCain, as you get into your mid-70s, whether, in fact, he is physically in a position to cope with the job or not is an open question. Certainly his doctors attest to his good health. He has a few health issues, as anybody his age is apt to have. And so it's something, again, each American will have more than enough information on which to probably make a decision on that criterion.
We're talking with Peverell Squire this hour, political scientist from the University of Missouri and co-editor of the Legislative Studies Quarterly. Hopefully talking to you this hour as well. What's your take on Barack Obama's big trip, and how about the media bias and the idea that maybe red states are, a few of them anyway, back in play for Democrats? The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. You can always email us as well at talk@wpr.org. I'm Veronica Rickert, in for Kathleen Dunn, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay tuned to Wisconsin Public Radio. After 11 o'clock, it's Larry Mueller. At 11:45, Larry talks about Wisconsin weather and climate with the Weather Guys. That's coming up at 11:45 today. Veronica Rickert back with you today for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network as we talk all things political with guest political scientist Peverell Squire from the University of Missouri. And we'll go back to the phones now. We've got a call from Barbara calling from Appleton. Hi, Barbara.
Good morning. Thank you. I have a comment concerning the speech that Obama made in Berlin. I happened to hear that live instead of catching bits and pieces of it later on the news. So I got the whole speech at once. I have to tell you, I was watching with a group of people, and it moved us. It touched our hearts, and I was so proud of our one of us in a different country speaking to so many people. Mm. And I don't think any politician can fake or control people's hearts. I think the reason all these people showed up had such wonderful reactions is because Obama touched hearts, whether it's Germans or Americans, whatever. So I had a feeling when I was listening to him, I kind of compare him to, I said, oh my God, that's our own Gandhi, our own Mandela. I'm so proud.
Barbara, one of the criticisms I read about the speech, and I didn't hear the speech live like you did, but there was a German newspaper that sort of took him to task for doing a speech that was all poetry without a lot of substance. What's your take on that criticism?
I think that, you know, people can criticize, and they have a right to. But as I said earlier, you have to have a vision that touches people's hearts to draw this kind of crowd, to touch that many hearts. And he was laying out a vision for people. It doesn't matter the color, the nationality. He touches people's hearts. And we need a leader like that in this day and age that we want to follow from the heart. As I said, I don't think you can fake something like that.
Hmm. All right. Thank you, Barbara. Thanks for the call. And Peverell Squire, what did you hear about the speech in Berlin?
Well, again, I think you characterize it correctly. I think people thought he was very good at sort of speaking in generalities, but there were some comments that maybe he didn't get into enough specifics to satisfy some people. And I'm not sure whether that was probably the appropriate occasion for a detailed discussion of policy specifics. But the one thing Senator Obama can do, as the caller mentions, is he can give an extraordinary speech. I think this is probably one of the biggest fears the Senator McCain's campaign has, is that McCain simply can't compete with the rhetoric of an Obama speech, particularly when Obama's on. There are times when he can speak in positive ways and hopeful ways that most American politicians simply can't match these days. And so I think from the McCain camp perspective, they probably hope there are few occasions for Senator Obama to make those kinds of speeches when there are a lot of Americans listening. And so going back to our convention question earlier, I think when Senator Obama gives his acceptance speech, and he's going to do it in this large stadium, if he has one of those occasions where he's hitting on all cylinders and he's put together a speech that talks to people's aspirations, as this caller suggests, it's going to be very hard for the McCain campaign to compete with that.
Do you think there's any advantage to going first or second in terms of conventions?
Generally, it's probably a little better to go first, with the reasoning that people are burned out on whatever convention coverage they're going to watch by the time the second one rolls around. But again, I think given how thoroughly covered the candidates are these days, other than their acceptance speeches, the conventions aren't going to produce much more coverage for them than they would have otherwise gotten. I don't know whether it's better to have the second speech so that you can respond to the first one. I think the problem for the McCain campaign is going to be that McCain is always going to have to be compared with Obama in terms of the acceptance speech, and Senator McCain's strength is not in giving speeches. It's in meeting people on a smaller basis in a more interactive forum. Giving speeches is not something he does particularly well, and I think they're probably worried that, again, the comparison between Obama and McCain when they give their acceptance speeches won't reflect well on the Republican candidate.
When do you think we can expect a VP announcement?
Well, of course, the people who cover both campaigns have been quite anxious for this to happen, and there was some thought that McCain might do it last week or maybe this week. I think the McCain people are probably trying to figure out when they can get the most media coverage, the most bang for their selection. And my guess is they'll probably make theirs first, and Obama will have a chance to respond. I think between now and the convention, that's probably the big story. I think with the Olympics rapidly approaching, my guess is both campaigns may decide that they want to get their pick in before August 8th when media attention may be harder for them to get.
It's interesting that this election falls during the Summer Olympics. Well, at least part of it does. Do you see that having a big impact on the coverage?
Well, I think to the extent that people in August are going to be huddled around their TV sets, they'll probably be watching the Olympics maybe a Brewers game or Packers preseason games on the off chance that the Brett Favre might show up. So there are all sorts of things that people are probably going to give more attention to than the presidential races during August. And so I think the campaigns understand that, and that's why I suspect we may hear from them about their vice presidential choices prior to the start of the Olympics, simply because they want to have some attention given to their campaign and get some mileage out of whoever they happen to pick.
Mm. All right, another phone call now. We've got Noreen calling from Plymouth. Hi, Noreen, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Excuse my voice, I have an allergy.
Oh.
I remember that the criticism of John Kerry's candidacy was that he didn't energize the base enough and that he moved too close to the middle. With Obama, as he's moving towards the middle, there is the millennium generation, which is the young people in their 20s that are very interested in his candidacy, working and probably voting for him in large, huge numbers. And when they investigated some of their ideals, it was truly that they wanted an authentic candidate. They don't watch TV. Some of them don't even own a TV. They interface on the network and web and stuff like that. And they said that they want somebody that's authentic and real. And I suspect that Obama going towards the middle is not going to do him very well with them. And I think that there are enough of us out here, the majority of us out here, that need a lot of help. And we would like to see him address the issues that are probably more on the left. For instance, I heard on TV yesterday that heating oil is going up 30% in the winter. And all of these things, we really don't need somebody going middle and right in that. They've got enough candidates in the past that have done that. That's my comment. Thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot, Noreen. Anne Peverell-Squire?
Well, this is the dilemma both candidates face. They want to move to the middle of the spectrum where the election's apt to be won. At the same time, they don't want to alienate the people who may be their stronger supporters, who are mayor, perhaps more ideologically pure than the voters in the middle. And so I think the Obama campaign will work very hard to try to keep their base energized. And my guess is when we get into the fall campaign and when people see the finish line ahead and when there's this notion of this historic candidacy and the possibility of electing the first African-American to the White House, that Senator Obama will probably be able to re-energize people who may be a little burned out by the process at this point. It's hard to keep people enthused from January through November. And so I'm not surprised that there may be a little bit of a lull In terms of the passion behind some of the Obama supporters. But I think he'll probably be able to speak in such a way, and again, in such of these sort of broad, hopeful terms rather than getting bogged down in specifics, that he will probably be able to get the people that he needs to turn out on Election Day, the sort of core Obama supporters, fully enthused to do that.
One thing Noreen touched on was their energy policies, and we do have an email here. This is something we haven't talked much about this hour, but we've got an email that says, McCain says we need to find new ways to become energy independent. Nuclear and oil drilling is just, quote, same old, and lacks any creativity. Americans are innovative and resourceful and could be world leaders in alternative and decentralized energy. McCain's energy strategy will hold us back in the dark ages. That's from Ivy calling from, or actually emailing from Wisconsin here. And what do you think about the energy policies of the two candidates and where they're heading?
Well, they have not articulated as clear an energy policy as we might like. Certainly, McCain has talked about doing more drilling, which is a shift in the position he has had in recent years, although he is unwilling to open up ANWR up in Alaska to drilling, as Obama is as well. And so it's hard to fully find a clear distinction between the two. Certainly, Obama is probably a little bit more sympathetic to alternative energy than McCain is, but Obama's left open the possibility of producing more in the way of nuclear energy as well. But I think right now, because of the extraordinary increase in energy prices that we've experienced over this last year, that a lot of the partisan lines are going to get a little bit fuzzy. We have sort of this extraordinary event right now of T. Boone Pickens coming out talking about the need to move to natural gas and to wind power. Pickens is an oil man, extraordinarily wealthy, one of the people who helped finance the Swift Boat campaign against John Kerry. Yet he's now talking in television commercials about policies that are probably closer to what Democrats think than what Republicans think. And so I think for both candidates, it's not going to be very easy to get a clear position on energy. You've got Democrats talking about drilling in the coastal areas right now in ways that we haven't for a couple of decades, and Republicans talking about wind power. So, again, I think this is going to muddy the picture a little bit, and we'll have to see whether either of the campaigns can articulate a clear, consistent energy policy. But to this point, neither one of them probably has done particularly well on that score.
I wish I had it in front of me, but I thought that I'd recently read something that there is popular opinion in the American public saying that they do favor more drilling.
That's right. That is something that has shown up in a couple of different surveys over the last couple of months. Americans are more willing to open up offshore areas to drilling than they have been for a generation. Whether that's just a temporary blip as a response to increasingly high gas prices, or whether this is a real shift of policy that will hold over the next year or so as we get used to this sort of new world of expensive gas remains to be seen. But I think the one thing that both candidates have to emphasize when they talk about drilling and developing new energy sources is none of this is going to happen very quickly, and none of this is going to change what we pay at the pump anytime soon.
Time for one more quick call, and Keith from Milwaukee.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you, Keith?
Oh, pretty good. I'm listening and hearing everybody singing the praises of Barack Obama, and I'm wondering when people are going to wake up and see him for what he is. And I think the term has been used before as a silver-tongued devil. I listened to the speech in Germany, and I was rather put off, actually, because it sounded like he was apologizing for the United States. And I know our nation is not perfect, but I don't think anybody needs to apologize for us. I think that we've done what we've needed to do. I think that things are being handled as well as they can be, and I don't really see us pulling our troops out of Afghanistan or Iraq anytime soon, simply because if we do, I believe it'll be like a vacuum, and it'll pull in more terrorists, and Al-Qaeda will have free rein to do what they need to do, and it'll just be worse than it was before. It's... I don't think we have a real great choice of either one, but I remember going back to the 60s when Kennedy said, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. I see government becoming too big, becoming too involved in our lives. Providing health care is not something that I want my government to do. There are many things that I don't want my government to do because they're just not efficient at doing it.
All right. Well, I think we're going to leave it there, Keith, so we can give our guest a time to respond.
Sure.
Thanks a lot. And Peveril Squire, we've got about 30 seconds left for your response.
Well, as we head into the fall and as we begin to really compare the candidates side by side, that gives each of them a little bit better opportunity than they've had to this point to draw some distinctions. And we'll see whether in the discussion of healthcare, where they do have somewhat different approaches, whether in fact they'll begin to emphasize these differences. And in doing that, they may be able to appeal to a number of the callers who have come in today who would like to see a greater difference between the two candidates rather than looking at the two of them and thinking that they sound much too similar.
Peveril Squire, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us this morning. It's been fascinating.
My pleasure.
All right. Thanks a lot. Peveril Squire is our guest political scientist today. He hails from the University of Missouri and is co-editor of the Legislative Studies Quarterly. I want to thank Carmen Jackson for on-air production this morning and Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour. I'm Veronica Rickert, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.